Welcome, friends, to Radio St. Pete's Lunchtime Conversations. And all of you are starting to send your kids back to school, back to college, and breathing a sigh of relief. I have someone with me that is a devoted reader, a devoted learner, and a devoted writer, Steve Levine of Levenger Press, Levenger.com. He is an author. He is a pastor. He is a publisher and so much more. And my fellow colleague at Cornell, welcome, Steve.
Well, Nanette, what a pleasure to talk to you again. We met in a university many years ago. We were both grad students, and I have such fond memories of those years.
Well, of course, you know, one of the things, we're going to talk a little bit about your journey from San Diego to Cornell. And how you launched Levenger, which is, you know, honestly, in this day and age, I've read your book, 1,000 Books to Read Before You Die, and I think that you probably have read 1,001 plus. So, Steve, tell us a little bit about growing up and your love of reading and writing and music. We'll get to Chuck Mangione in a bit, folks.
dear Chuck Mangione, yes. Well, I was kind of late to the bookshelf, as I call it. I kind of faked my way through college reading assignments. And it wasn't until later in life, I would say, that I got the real thirst to read books and to make up for lost time. And that was when I was running Levenger Company, which my wife and I started way back in 1987, almost 38 years ago. And that company is originally Tools for Serious Readers, and still we sell, that company sells gear for readers, writers, and thinkers. Anyway, what customers would come, would say to me all the time is, well, gee, I like what you guys sell, but what I really want, you can't give me, and that's more time to read. So that's what prompted me to write my first book, which came out 20 years ago, A Little Guide to Your Well-Read Life, about getting more books in your life and more life from your books.
Well, and you went on to publish some interesting books. I'm sitting here. I have, of course, thanks to you, a collection. The George Washington Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation with Letitia Baldridge. Also, you know, you actually went back and did some archival republishing Churchill's Wit and Wisdom. Talk to us a little bit about the publishing imprint.
Yeah, well, Levenger sold mostly and sells mostly products other than books for readers. But we did publish a number of books along the years, and thanks mainly to our wonderful editor, Mim Harrison, who is still editing books and working part-time for Levenger. And so we had a lot of fun. We published some Churchill books and some book on Cicero. I have one of his quotations framed in my office, actually.
Which one, Steve? Because I still have my Goethe quote that you gave me years ago.
Oh, I remember that. Let me see. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin. Boldness has power, something in magic in it.
Absolutely. What do you have on your, what is your Cicero quote that you inspires you?
Well, part of the Cicero quote is, in the pursuit of useful knowledge. And I guess that's what I've been trying to do in my career, in my checkered career through various occupations.
Now, you, I believe you also published some Lewis Carroll, and did I get this right, that Ed Koren was an illustrator that you used as well?
That's right. The beloved New Yorker cartoonist, Ed Koren, illustrated, we had two little books from Lewis Carroll, and we were very honored to have if people may remember his kind of chatty characters that he did, which are so distinctive.
Really a lot of fun. Now, you know, you had, so you didn't exactly end up in the book business and the writing tools and business directly. Originally, you were going to be a doctor. You had a real interest in science. I know you got a fellowship to be in San Diego on the public broadcasting station. But you then, after you worked in New York City and met the beautiful Lori and the two of you with your great minds, you know, and your father's acumen, I want to talk a little bit about your dad and your mom and how each gave you a different tool that helped you in life and in your profession that you have chosen, which is to illuminate great ideas. So, Steve, you actually originally were going to be a doctor and had interest in science, and you actually did a won a fellowship to report on science for San Diego Public Radio. Tell me a little bit about the tools that your parents gave you that kind of inspired you and helped make you a success. I know your father was an incredible businessman. Your mother was a mind-body wellness person. So talk to me a little bit about the legacy from each of them that lives on in your life, personally and professionally.
Well, thank you for asking about my mother and father. They both died within the last 10 years. And, yeah, they both had a big influence on my life, of course. They're very different people, and as I got to know them as adults, it was no surprise that they were only married 9 years, and I grew up with my mother and didn't really get to know my father until later when I met you back at Cornell and went back to New York where he lived in Syracuse. Anyway, they both were influential, greatly influential. My mother was a social work and a therapist, and I guess inculcated in me the desire to help others, which is what she did throughout her whole career. My father was a businessman and you know, a wonderful intellect, and gave me the encouragement to be in business. And so I guess my life sort of is a mashup of a businessman and also a writer with the goal of writing about useful knowledge and trying to be of service to others.
And we're going to talk about the philanthropic work and also your fabulous book, Bilingual America and Launching the American Bilingual Project, Never More Important Than Now. I want to talk about how did you come up with the concept of Levenger. And I know that you know, we found some historic books, a Strunk and White, an original at Cornell, and you
right.
always were interested in vintage, taking classic and vintage things and repurposing and reinventing them in a modern tradition, which still, if you look through Levenger.com's website, you see. Talk to me about the concept and why it worked.
Yeah, well, thank you. Levenger was the brainchild of my wife and I. It's a mashup of our names, Levine and Granger. And left to my own devices, I probably would have stayed in writing and consulting. But my wife, who had worked for IBM, saw the benefit of selling products. And so we sort of hatched the idea of selling products to readers. Tools for Serious Readers was the first ad line we had, and that hit a responsive chord. To our knowledge, no company had dedicated itself to serving readers with productivity tools and nice products for home offices and so forth. And that's what we started up, and Levenger is still chugging along, although I stepped out and my wife stepped out 10 years ago, and we have a very competent CEO running Levenger today named Margaret Morosky. And she's continuing the spirit of trying to help readers and writers and thinkers with products and also with books.
So speaking of thinkers, I want to just read you folks a little bit about Steve Levine. We are talking to him today in our questions. So Steve decided he didn't have enough degrees and he didn't have enough time at the university. So you'll tell me, I think this was 2015, you were named a fellow of the Advanced Leadership Initiative at Harvard University. Wasn't enough to have one Ivy League degree or two in 2015, and then a fellow of the Distinguished Career Institute at Stanford University in 2016. You
Yep.
used these fellowship years to conduct research on a book that is prescient, on bilingualism. Tell people a little bit, because I love the foreword, why this was important to you growing up in San Diego, and why you continue to pursue this and support this initiative.
Sure. Well, you get me started talking about bilingualism in America. It's hard to get me to shut up. But let me just back up one second and about these fellowship programs at Harvard and Stanford. These are sometimes called third stage education, and it's an idea that started at Harvard and Stanford, and it's such a good idea that it's expanded to other universities, including University of Chicago and Notre Dame and Oxford and Cambridge and in England. And the idea is to take invite people back to campus after they've already sort of finished their first career, whatever that might be, and give them the opportunity to be surrounded again by a university, in a university environment for a year or so, and study projects or what have you. So yes, I used those years. They were wonderful lifelong learning experiences, and I dove into what I became fascinated with, which is the bilingualism in America. And surprisingly, we tend to think of America as a wasteland of monolinguals. And while it's true that the United States has more monolinguals probably than any other country, we also, surprisingly, lead the world in bilingualism in terms of the depth and breadth of our bilingual population. And so it's been a lot of fun learning that and describing that in book form, and also our podcast, the America the Bilingual Podcast, interview engaging American bilinguals. And we also have a quiz, a 10-question quiz about bilingualism in America, which listeners might be interested in taking at AmericaTheBilingual.com.
Well, you know, we hope that you will talk to us about perhaps rebroadcasting some of these terrific podcasts with us on Radio St. Pete. People are built to be bilingual, you say. And, you know, there's a lot of science in this, and there's a lot of humanity in this. And what is it now that you're doing to get people to understand the importance of bilingual? And you actually completely embrace Spanish, and I'm embarrassed because I'm still at level one, and you actually, half of your emails are in Spanish, and I love that about you. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing to support and advocate for this.
Yeah, well, in addition to having the podcast where we interview bilinguals, we also are coming out with a workbook next month called How to Learn a Language for Life. And I've written this with a co-author who's a young man at Stanford by the name of Akshay Swaminathan. And it's a workbook for how you can adopt a second language into your life and learn it throughout your life with great satisfaction and enjoyment and ultimately proficiency.
Well, it's really exciting, Steve, and I know that you know, this now, as we are looking at America, is even so much more important to acknowledge that people with other languages are not invisible, and to understand their language helps you to understand their culture and what they contribute. So I also noticed that you have a number of masterclasses now in Messenger, and even a new cookbook author with a workbook. Tell me a little bit about masterclass. It seems like now you've really re-embrace the whole notion of a third encore chapter and education at all ages. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I had nothing to do with that idea, I'm happy to say, but our CEO, Margaret Morosky, received a letter from a customer named Sue Veters, who said, you ought to take your notebook system. These are disc-bound Circa notebooks that we sell. And make a workbook on how to write a novel, and I'll write it for you because I'm a creative writing instructor, have been for a generation. And our CEO, Margaret Morosky, said, well, okay, that sounds like a good idea. And it was a good idea, and that How to Write a Novel has been a bestseller at Levenger and still is selling very well. And then she decided to do other kinds of books. So we also have just came out How to Write a Children's Picture Book by Kate Jerome. And we have How to Write a Cookbook by Patty Hinnich. And coming up later this year will be How to Write a Screenplay. And then in my book, along with Akshay Swami Nathan, about how to learn a language for life, comes out later this year. We have about a half a dozen more in the queue coming out. And what we find is, while so much of our learning is online these days with YouTube videos and other really useful tools, there's still plenty of benefit to sitting down with pen and paper. And so we kind of give people a step-by-step workbook and guide to step them through their learning process.
I love that. What are you doing in your spare time, Steve? And I probably know that you have another book up your sleeve in addition to the one you just told me about, How to Learn a Second Language. You're always writing, always. You have the, you know, essays and opinion pieces, and so what's up your sleeve, and what's in the next chapter? I'm not going to say encore chapter, because every time I turn around, there's another chapter to your book of life.
No.
So what's next?
Actually doing a second edition to that, because so much has changed in how we read books in the last 20 years. In fact, I think more has changed in the last 20 years about book reading than has in the last 200, when you consider that the Amazon Kindle and electronic readers came out in 2007, the iPhone came out in 2007. Social networks for books like Goodreads came out in 2010, I think. And audiobooks, of course, have exploded in popularity, as, of course, have podcasts. So today's readers have so many more opportunities to engage with books. Ironically, however, people are reading fewer books, according to Pew Research data. But so the second edition of the little guide is dedicated to helping us busy, distracted adults get more books into their lives.
Well, Steve, I want to ask you, of course, the question that we're all asking ourselves, as I feel a little bit antiquated, as AI could write an article or do an interview, and I put sometimes, how are you using or not using AI in your writing and research life?
I use AI daily, and actually, I use it a lot to simulate conversations in Spanish.
Really?
Which,
Talk to us
yeah,
about that.
well, I use ChatGPT and just put it on the audio function, and we have simulated conversations in Spanish, and it's like having a wonderful, knowledgeable tutor who's infinitely patient with my massacring of Spanish sentences and grammar. And I call it simulated conversation because, of course, it's not a real conversation with a person. But I also have a human tutor, which I and I try to use the AI to help me improve, just as maybe a pilot would using a flight simulator to improve his or her flying. So it's a great boon for language learning. I also, of course, like you and probably everybody else, use AI now for research and assistance in writing.
Well, Steve, you also do you still have a newsletter for your own pieces that you're writing in addition to what you have for the American Bilingual Project?
Well, occasionally I write something for Levenger when Margaret Murawski asked me to. And occasionally write pieces for the American the Bilingual Project. So that keeps me pretty busy.
And for your life, are you still listening to music? Are you still sailing? What are you and Lori up to these days?
Well, after living in Florida full time for 25 years, we've now become pesky snowbirds. So, and worse than that, we're pesky summer people up here in Maine during the summer. So that way we get to annoy people year round. But yeah, we're on the water up here in Harpswell, Maine, and I enjoy being out in the water in one form or another pretty much every day.
That's wonderful, Steve. Well, I want to thank you so much. I would like you to just offer a bit of advice to how to have a well-read life to our listeners who may love podcasts and want to re-engage with books.
Well, I think some people get hung up on reading important literature. I put importance in quotations here, or reading some great books, and can get intimidated by reading and the obligation of reading. And I would advise people to read what they truly love and what they can fall in book love with. Book love is what I call it when you can't wait to get back to that novel or narrative nonfiction or biography or self-help book, whatever it is you're reading. And if you manage to do that, be reading a book you love all the time, in my opinion, you're leading a well-read life.
Well, we want to thank you, Steve, for giving us a well-listened-to podcast today. Folks, I'll have all of the links to what Steve's been talking about. Steve Levine, Levinger.com, author of 1,000 Books to Read Before You Die, The Little Guide to Your Well-Read Life, a good friend and colleague, but most importantly, a man who turns ideas into reality. And Steve, we can't thank you enough for joining us on Radio St. Pete today. Thank you.
A great pleasure to be speaking with you again, Nanette.
Until next time, I'm your host, Nanette Weiser. Stay tuned and keep reading.